U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Senator Joe Manchin plants his flag on the filibuster and Democrats' election reform bill as another ruling by the Senate parliamentarian complicates Joe Biden's broader agenda. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnists Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. For months now, Democrats have been pushing H.R. 1, their bill to essentially federalize election rules nationwide, saying that this legislation is needed to save American democracy, more or less. But in a 50-50 Senate, the bill can't pass unless Democrats stick together and also agree to eliminate the filibuster, the rule that it takes 60 votes to advance legislation. And on Sunday, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin drew a pretty solid line in the sand, giving maybe his clearest expression yet on both issues. It was an op-ed for the newspaper in Charleston, West Virginia. He opposes H.R. 1. He said this, voting and election reform that is done in a partisan manner will all but ensure partisan divisions continue to deepen, unquote. And Kim, what do you think? I mean, that's about as strong of a no from Joe Manchin on this as I think we're going to get.
Yeah. And it doesn't look as though he's going to change his mind on that. He subsequently had a meeting with civil rights groups, groups like the NAACP. They clearly had gone in to try to lobby him. He came out of that meeting saying, nope, I haven't changed my mind. We all at least know where we stand, but I still can't vote for this bill. And one thing that I find really fascinating about this is if you look at Joe Manchin, he's not really a conviction politician. His op-ed, he didn't call out provisions of the bill and say, I disagree with this or that. He rather, to the extent that he has opposed legislation or has stuck with keeping the filibuster, his argument is that we need to pass bills in a bipartisan manner. And there isn't currently a single Republican who can swallow H.R. 1. And so changes needed to be made for us to come together. And that's interesting just because it doesn't necessarily allow Democrats to say, well, we can fix this provision or that provision and finally get Joe Manchin's vote. It would mean they have to start over in a way and come up with some sort of bill that would get Republican support. And that's hard to imagine.
And on the question of eliminating the filibuster, that's something that reporters on Capitol Hill have been asking Joe Manchin about, badgering him, it seems like every 5 or 10 minutes for months now. And he reiterated his support there. And I'll read just a piece of the op-ed. He said, do we really want to live in an America where one party can dictate and demand everything and anything it wants whenever it wants? I've always said if I can't go home and explain it, I can't vote for it. And I cannot explain strictly partisan election reform or blowing up Senate rules to expedite one party's agenda, unquote. And Bill, again, I know Manchin has said no in the past, that he's not interested in changing or eliminating the filibuster. But putting it in black and white in print in the local state newspaper is something that's pretty hard to walk away from.
Yeah, I think, I mean, part of me suspects that this is part of the pressure. This is partly a response to the pressure he's getting. Remember, back in early February or late January, Kamala Harris came to the state and did an interview that's, you know, without his knowledge, that seemed like she was putting the squeeze on him. Recently, Joe Biden, you know, mentioned, you know, not by name, but suggested that he voted with Republicans more than Democrats, which isn't true. I don't think he appreciates that. And the problem is, in a 50-50 Senate, everyone on your side is a king. Everyone is a potential deal maker or deal breaker if they go in a different way. And for Joe Manchin, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him now from Democratic polls and from left wingers. I'm not sure he cares about that as much as what the people of his home state think. And I think that it's a good place for him to be in, that I am a moderate. I am not willing to go this far, especially for such a a left-wing agenda, because that's what the filibuster is. Filibuster is the roadblock to this whole agenda that's with tons of spending, higher taxes, the change in our electoral laws, of federalizing our elections. And he knows that. And I suspect that there are a few other Democratic senators that are not so brave, but glad that he's doing this. It may give them cover. We'll see how the Biden administration regroups, because if he sticks to his guns, it really puts a lot of their agenda in jeopardy.
The question about whether there are other moderates who are sort of shielding behind Manchin here is an interesting one. Kim, I mean, what's your read of that? One guy I would ask about specifically is John Tester, the Democratic senator from Montana, who has also been asked about the filibuster. And he uses more open language and says things like, my crystal ball isn't very clear, we'll have to see what happens. But he doesn't seem particularly eager to take that vote in order to push through Biden's big agenda here.
Oh, sure. There's Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, obviously, from Arizona. I think Tester is on the fence on this. Moreover, I think there's a lot of House Democrats that are more centrist or in challenging districts that know that, quite aside from their own political fates, that if Democrats were to actually do this and eliminate the filibuster, it would probably provoke an enormous political backlash that could cost Democrats their power in the House and in the Senate in next year's elections. It is nonetheless striking to me, and I think this helps put Joe Manchin in context, just how many other so-called centrist senators, Democratic senators, who are a little bit more moderate on some issues, have nonetheless really crumpled to the pressure here and come out and said they do this. A good example is Angus King, who, for instance, was one of those that recently voted against overturning the Senate parliamentarian on the question of the minimum wage ruling during the COVID relief bill, but recently came out and said, well, when it comes to voting rights, I probably would be willing to overturn the filibuster for that, at least. Mark Warner is another one. But the reason I say this puts Manchin in context is the pressure has been insane and overwhelming. There have been activist groups pounding on this, taking out ads, doing calling campaigns to his office, people demonizing him out there. The reaction to this op-ed he did was incredible. I'll just quote, we had a quote from Jameel Hill, who's a political analyst and writer, and she wrote, "This is so on brand for this country. Record number of black voters show up to save this democracy, only for white supremacy to be upheld by a cowardly, power-hungry white dude. At Senator Joe Manchin is a clown," is what she tweeted. It's extraordinary. And so it just sort of shows there is a certain amount of political courage on display here, one that a lot of other Democrats are not willing to step up and show.
The reaction includes similar statements by some House Democrats. I'll read a few of them. One said that Manchin was standing up for voter suppression. Another said, quote, "Joe Manchin has become the new Mitch McConnell." And then here's another one. "Manchin's op-ed might as well be titled, 'Why All Vote to Preserve Jim Crow,'" unquote. And Bill, I mean, I get that those House Democrats are making a statement, and they're doing it to some extent, at least, for their voters back home. But what do you think what the effect of that is on Manchin? And does that just harden him in his position?
I think so. It reminds me years ago when Jesse Helms was in the Senate, and every couple of years they would throw all this money, and Hollywood would come in, Barbara Streisand would come in and campaign against him. It was almost a gift to him. I mean, these people would think, didn't know the local electorate that they're dealing with. And I think Joe Manchin probably knows his state voters pretty well. Look, it tells you sort of the paucity of arguments that they have, that everything that the Republicans is basically to uphold Jim Crow, or everything they oppose is Jim Crow, especially Rich coming from the party of Jim, Jim Crow, the Democratic Party. So I'm not sure that's going to work. I mean, that's the problem with the whole Biden agenda. In a tight Senate, in a deadlock Senate, and a tight House, you need every man on board. And, you know, people, I think, reasonable people always knew that there would be splits within the party on different issues, and not just on this, you know, on the state and local tax deduction, which some Democrats from the high tax states, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and California want. There's all sorts of splits. And now that he's trying to get it through, it's coming to a head. So I guess I have more confidence in Joe Manchin to read his own voters than I do, you know, all the people screaming at him.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Kim, what real tools do Democrats, particularly those in leadership, have to persuade Manchin that it would be in his interest to change his mind on these issues? I mean, one that has been talked about a little bit is that Manchin is the chairman of the Energy Committee. And so Majority Leader Chuck Schumer could presumably have a push to replace him in that role.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead. That would probably be the dumbest thing that Chuck Schumer could do. Some of us are old enough to remember a guy named James Jeffords, who was a Vermont Republican. And in 2001, when there was also a 50-50 Senate, he switched parties and went over to the Democratic side, thereby effectively, or in reality, giving Democrats control of the chamber. And, you know, I have no doubt that Joe Manchin, if that was actually enacted upon him, would potentially switch. He certainly, I doubt, would just sit there and take it when the Republicans would welcome him with open arms and give him any committee he wanted in order to switch and give them control again. So I don't think you'll see that happening. You know, one other tool that leaders have, which is usually more productive when it comes to enticing senators along in tight situations, is bribery, as it were. You know, is there something that Joe Manchin really, really wants? Could Chuck Schumer give it to him? But I don't see anything out there that is potentially in that category that would convince Joe Manchin to abandon what he's now written down, as you mentioned, in black and white in newspaper. And that, I will give Joe Manchin credit for that. There have been some things on which his position, as it were, has evolved. Like a good example is for quite some time, he refused to sign on to the PRO Act, which is the big union agenda bill. After a sustained pressure campaign, he did finally put his name to it and co-sponsored it. But it wasn't as if he had said, no, I'm opposed to it, and then changed his mind. He does tend to be pretty consistent. And so I think it would be, he takes these things as kind of matters of honor. And I doubt very much there's anything that anyone could do to him to get him to change his view on these two very big issues at the moment, HR1 and the filibuster.
Yeah, and it's interesting that President Biden, the White House at least, is taking the opposite approach and trying to woo him more helpful to use honey than vinegar, as the saying goes. Here's what the White House press secretary said on Monday. The president considers Senator Manchin a friend. He's going to continue to work with him, reach out to him, engage with him directly, so on and so forth. But it's interesting, Bill, because it seems to me that Democrats are now facing a similar kind of problem that we are all pretty used to talking about with the GOP, which is you have some of these people in the House, particularly in very red districts, who run against the leadership of their party. It seems that some of them would rather have a smaller and purer party than have a broad tent and maybe a majority. And it's interesting now we're seeing a similar sort of dynamic on the left with these House districts in cities like New York, if you want to just take Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as an example, that are very blue members. And what they would prefer to do, maybe what their voters want to hear, is that they are against Joe Manchin. They're against the leadership. And we've got a 50-50 Senate. So why can't we get this done?
Yeah, well, the problem is the 50-50 Senate, they don't work for the president. I mean, all presidents find this in their party. A lot of people like Joe Manchin, I'm sure, they've seen a lot of presidents come and go. The president might be of the same party. He might outrank him because he's the president, but he's not his boss. And you're always hostage to your weakest link when you have a tight majority. As you mentioned, Republicans have seen that. When you need everyone, it makes every single person gives them incredible power. So it's not unusual in that sense. I think what it's doing is kind of what you're alluding to, is because this majority is so narrow, it's highlighting the natural divisions in any party, especially now in the Democrats. That's progressives that want a much more ambitious, much more radical agenda, don't want any compromise, just want to ram things through. And some that might be more centrist, or at least trying to get, you know, make the deal that will get something through. And there's always those tensions, but it's much more highlighted when you don't have any votes to spare.
Meanwhile, the Senate parliamentarian has thrown up another roadblock to the broader Biden agenda. Kim, you wrote your column last Friday about this. What's the story here?
Yeah, this has to do with budget reconciliation. It's a kind of wonky thing, but it's grown in importance because with Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema saying that they will not break the filibuster, you had Chuck Schumer in March come up with this new idea that he would try to use budget reconciliation, which is a process that only requires only a simple majority, so only 51 votes, use budget reconciliation to pass the rest, as much of the Biden agenda as he can. The problem is that reconciliation is only supposed to be used once per fiscal year. So Schumer in March kind of came up with this novel and crazy theory that, in fact, when you looked at the 1974 budget law, it actually gave him the power to keep revising that one annual bill, therefore giving him endless 51 vote vehicles to use during the year. And this is where the Senate parliamentarian came in last week. She issued guidance, more like a ruling, saying that while revision is possible, that the law's framers made pretty clear it should only be used in situations where there's sharply changed economic conditions. It should not be used to just avoid the filibuster, as clearly Mr. Schumer was proposing doing it. But more importantly, she ruled that if you were going to have a revision, the budget committee actually has to have a vote and pass it to the floor. And that just creates a technical problem for the Democrats, because the budget panel is currently split 11-11. No Republican is going to vote for it. In theory, the full Senate could vote to break a tie. But if it really got to that point, the Republican members could simply boycott any proceedings and prevent a committee vote from happening in the first place. So it looks as though he's got one more bite at the reconciliation apple this year, the bill for fiscal 2022. And that's kind of a problem, because he'd have to jam a lot of stuff in there, and that might make Democrats nervous.
Or they'd have to make a choice, essentially. I mean, Biden and these infrastructure negotiations with Republicans are still ongoing. So the latest number is kind of a moving target. But Biden's proposal was for $2.3 trillion of infrastructure, then a families plan that is about $1.8 trillion. And so, Bill, if you only have one shot here at reconciliation, then the choice, it seems to me, is you either put all that stuff together into a $4 trillion bill and try to see if you can get the moderates on board to pass something of that scale, or Bill, Biden has to make a decision of what he really, you know, what his priority is.
Yeah, I mean, I incline to, again, this was a lot of the Biden agenda was always a wish list, and it'd be one thing if they had, you know, a 60-40 majority in the Senate, and it's just a different thing now. And this isn't unusual. This isn't strange. This is what happens in the Senate. What's happened all the time. It it requires give and take and compromise. And they haven't really been able to do that. And it works to the Republican advantage, of course, because as long as there's one or two Democrats in doubt, the Republicans just have to, you know, have to hold fast. And Democrats like Joe Manchin are kind of doing their work for them.
And meanwhile, the same sort of people who are going after Joe Manchin in the House are saying, Kim, that there is a way around this. You could ignore the parliamentarian's decision. You could fire the parliamentarian. But I guess I don't see, maybe I'm wrong, I don't see that getting majority support either.
Right. I mean, look, if you go back to the last COVID relief bill that we went through, you also had a similar thing where the parliamentarian ruled on the minimum wage. Then there was an effort by Bernie Sanders to simply overrule her, ignore that opinion. And in the end, 8 Democrats voted against that. You know, and it's unclear how many of them were voting against it because they disliked the principle of overruling the parliamentarian, how many voted against it because they didn't want a $15 minimum wage. But the bigger point is that, you know, Joe Manchin, again, is an institutionalist and someone who has not just defended the filibuster, but the broad array of Senate rules, of which the parliamentarian is a big part of that system. Again, very difficult to see him or a cinema or others agreeing to any to overrule her, or probably taking a very dim view if Schumer was to move to fire the parliamentarian, and there would be problems there too.
So one last thought here is this or could this Senate blockage have the effect essentially of saving Biden from himself, or maybe saving him from the party's activists on the left by keeping him in the moderate lane as we march toward the 2022 midterms? We're only 16 months out from November 2022. And Bill, your column on Monday touches on some of the politics specifically with Hispanic voters.
Right. And it's not just Hispanic voters, but what I was writing about is the trends we've seen in the Rio Grande Valley, where these blue districts are they're not all turning red, but the Democratic margin has drastically reduced. You know, in the general Rio Grande Valley area, I think in 2016, Hillary won by an average 39% or 42%. Anyway, Joe Biden won by only 17%. And on Saturday, there was a mayor, a Republican, elected in a border town in Texas, first one in 100 years. But the larger issue is why are Latinos going over to the Republican side? And it's along with a lot of voters. There was a Democratic study, a couple of activist groups got together and looked at it, and they concluded that the Republican attacks on Democrats as radicals was working. You know, they emphasized socialism, they emphasized defunding police and so forth. So this was last year when Joe Biden was running as a moderate. Now with all this stuff, I think it's a real problem. And Democrats realize that the progressives are pushing them too far. You know, several Democratic House members complained that the defunding the police movement alone almost cost them their seat. So I think they're in a very tricky position. You know, AOC can do whatever she wants and Bernie can do whatever he wants because they're in kind of safe seats, but not everyone's in that position. So I don't know what they're going to do move forward. I think that it's not necessarily going to help Biden that he didn't get the whole agenda through, because I think they want this, and he may get the worst of all worlds, not get enough to satisfy the progressives, but be pushing enough where people see, wow, these people want really left-wing things, and I don't want that. It's and some of the Democrats realize this problem.
Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.